This is the HopeCast Network. Stories and shows you actually want to listen to.
Well, what's up, work advisors? My name is Brad. I'm your host who brings the most. Yeah, it's a good day to be alive. It's 2024. Who's excited about the new year? I'm excited. I gotta be honest. This is a boss episode. Yeah, this was a boss chat for me. I'm saying boss twice because my family gets on to me. My family is not one to hold back, guys. They will tell me all the time, you gotta stop saying boss. And I'm like, no. My kids are like, that is so 10 years ago. And I'm like, well, I'm old, so who really cares? But today is a boss episode because we're talking to a real life magician. Yes, we are talking to Wes Barker. He's all the way from Canada. Yeah, which makes him cool already because I love talking to Canadians. And let me tell you, Wes is pretty incredible. He's been on the True TV show Big Trick Energy, co-hosted it with some friends. It's a lot like Impractical Jokers, but magic, which makes it even cooler to me. He's been on America's Got Talent and Penn and Teller's Fool Us. He actually fooled Penn and Teller. Can you imagine fooling Penn and Teller? You're that good. Yeah. This guy is amazing at what he does. And this chat is pretty amazing also. So you're going to enjoy it. But before we get to that chat, if you're listening on iTunes or Spotify or any of those platforms, please leave us a positive review. We don't like negative reviews here at Work Advice. You know that. We've said that from day one. We like good reviews. And like and subscribe. And if you want to, you can follow us on Work Advice for Me on Instagram. Yeah, I said that wrong, but I'm going to say it again. On Instagram, at Work Advice for Me. And if you have a question, you can email me and I will maybe read it on air, maybe not. This question comes from Eric, and he emailed the show at workadviceforme@gmail.com, and it's Eric from Detroit. I like Detroit, Eric. It gets a bad rap. Detroit gets a bad rap, but it's a nice city. If you've ever been to Detroit, you need to go if you've never been. You can see Canada right across the border. You can see Wes waving at us. But Eric writes, Brad, I really enjoyed your Heidi Powell conversation. I need to lose weight. How can I do it? I can't find the motivation. Have you ever tried to lose weight and was it successful? Okay, Eric, you got a lot going on in that question. First, thanks for emailing the show. Second, it's never easy to lose weight, my friend. I struggle with it. I'm always trying to lose the man boobs because I get them and I want them gone. So what I've done has not worked up until this point. I tried Noom. It was great for a while. I tried intermittent fasting, but you know what really helped me, Eric? See, I had a mistress. Yep, I was cheating on my wife with Debbie. Little Debbie. Not an actual woman, but the dessert. I love my wife way too much for that. I had to have Debbie's every night. My wife finally called me out on it. She said, Brad, why are you eating so many little Debbie's? And I said, what are you talking about, babe? And then I had to do a self-inventory. So, Eric, do a self-inventory of what you're eating. I stopped eating sweets. I really reduced my sweet intake. Lost about 20 pounds in the last 8 weeks. Thank you, Heidi Powell. I owe that to you. You've motivated me to drop the LBs. Hopefully, Eric, you get motivated and you stop eating the sweets. Because I'm sure you are like me, a sweet lover. And I can crush anything chocolate. I love Oreos. Gosh, I love some Oreos. Anyway, with that being said, let's get to the chat with Wes. So, we're about to chat with Wes. So, turn off David Copperfield or any magic show you're watching. And let's let Wes fool us with such a great conversation. Hey, Wes. Right. Thank you for coming on. I have been looking forward to this chat for a while because I get to talk to a real-life magician, and to me, this is like the best feeling ever. I love it. So thank you for coming on.
I'm happy to be on here. It seems like you talk to people from all different walks of life. That seems like your thing, so happy to fill the magician role for you.
Yeah, you are. I'm telling you, I've been wanting a magician on here forever, You have completed work advice bingo for me, because it was all I needed was a magician. We're good now. We can stop. I can be done now.
Perfect.
Yeah. So, hey, tell me a little bit. What was it like growing up for you?
You know, I grew up in on a small farm about an hour outside of Vancouver, BC. And, it was just very much like yard work, chores. My brother and I, in high school, we were like, bought a lawnmower and started a little landscaping, lawn cutting company. It's everything in my life has been very like, like we didn't have we barely had TV growing up, you know, we just like, it didn't, it was, everything was outside, outdoors, working in the shop, building things. And then when I got to high school, it was like all about playing basketball. I went to university on a basketball scholarship. Like my whole life was not performance in any way. Mm-hmm. I didn't even get into magic till I was almost 20 years old, because I had a really boring summer job. So yeah, growing up was just very much like outside, working on my hands, building stuff. That was my whole life.
Okay, but that's teaching you hard work, right? Like I feel like a lot of kids today my son doesn't know what hard work is, really. I mean, you brought up doing a lawn business. I had to mow grass too growing up. I feel like I've had a lawnmower in my hand since I was 9 years old.
And, yeah, truly.
Yeah, when I die, they just need to put the lawnmower handlebars in my hands in the casket, because I feel like that's where they stay in life, right? And
it's interesting, because like with all my friends now, like a lot of my friends are performers, comedians, or magicians, mm-hmm. and I still get up every day 6:45, 7, you know, and they all can't believe it. They're all sleeping until noon, because that's just like the schedule they're on. But I can't, I'm like, from day one, it was get up. There's like, I got to feed the pigs, I got to feed the chickens, I got to get outside. So I'm just perpetually stuck in this, like getting up at 7 a.m. for the rest of my life type thing, which is really effective, because I can get 3 hours of editing done before most of my friends even have a first cup of coffee. But yeah, man, it instilled something in me, that's for sure.
It's amazing. The older I get, the less I can sleep in. Now kids do change that for me. But, you know, if you told me I had to sleep till 11, I don't think I could do it. I would hate it, because the morning would be gone. I'd be like, half my day's gone, because I like to fall asleep around 10 o'clock at night, maybe 10:30. That's my sweet spot, yeah. Get some good rest. Yeah. And knock out some stuff. Now, let me ask you this. You cut grass, because I'm a fellow grass cutter for people. I made $25 to mow almost an acre. It was a lot. Push mower, no self-propel. Oh, that was I getting ripped off? Like, was it a rip-off for me?
Depends on what year it is, but I'm going to say pretty much, yeah, you were getting ripped off.
Let's say the year was 1995. So, yeah.
I would say that was pretty close, but I would have been probably looking for something more close to 40 for an acre like that. Oh, but yeah.
I should have negotiated this deal. It was, I was not, but hey, I was 25, or not 25, it was $25, and I was like, hey, I got some cash in my pocket. That's a good thing. IRS isn't taking it. So, hey, we're good, right? I would just push it down. I would push the lawnmower down the road. No self-propel. Now it's self-propel everything. You got the heels. Yeah, you're just sweating. You're like, oh, this sucks. Yeah. But yeah, it's all about hard work. And I want to go back. You fed pigs. You had pigs?
Yeah, we had, you know, anywhere between 2 and 4 pigs growing up. And we had, you know, the couple dozen chickens. We had a horse, or a couple horses at one point. Like, yeah, it was just like a small hobby farm, you know. My dad has a full-time job and everything, but it was just like what he liked to do on his spare time. And he likes to be like self-sustaining, you know, big garden and everything. So yeah, it was always something to do. And me and my brother and my dad and my stepmom, and that was just like what we were trying to do on the farm and keep it going. And it was fun. It was cool having pigs, because, you know, you can name your bacon, which is good, and then you can eat it eventually.
I bet it's really good fresh too. Like
good.
my co-host B on the recap show, she has chickens, and she says chickens just die at weird times. She had a chicken just fall over in her backyard, just right there.
Oh yeah. That's for sure.
You don't know when they're gonna die, but they just die. And I got to see a picture, and it was pretty cool. I'm like, oh, that's fascinating. You know, and then I was like, did you want to eat it? No, you don't eat it, because it's dead. But you got to kill the chicken while they're alive, then eat it. You don't eat it after it dies.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
you wouldn't want to risk that for sure. Yeah, chickens are insane though, man. Like they are so easy, and like you're getting rid of all your food scraps and you're feeding it to them, and then you're collecting eggs and eating those. Like they don't take up a lot of space. Like it's really, I mean, it's maybe the perfect thing to have, even if you only have a small yard. I mean, get some chickens going if you're allowed in your area. Cause holy crap. Like the benefit of it is just so fascinating. Like I think it's one of the best things you can do.
The eggs are great too, right?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. It's not like the egg you get in the store, but I mean, it's a good way, especially with the egg crisis we had. Did you have that in Canada where eggs were like sky high all of a sudden? Where it's like $8 for a dozen eggs?
Probably. See, I say probably because like I didn't buy eggs until I was like 25, right? I would just go to my dad's and pick them up, right? And then the first time I went to buy eggs, I was living with my now wife, but we went to the store and I'd literally never bought eggs, never even seen anyone buy eggs. And she like picks up a carton of eggs and she like opens them up and she's like counting them. And I'm like, what the hell is she doing? Like there's obviously 12 there. And then I was like, what are you doing? And then she's like, you have to check to see if they're broken. And I was like, oh, I literally thought she was counting out 12 eggs, you know? And I'm like, this is insane. So my knowledge of eggs in the supermarket is very low. And even now, like, I mean, now I go get them, but I don't know what the price used to be. So yeah,
that is an actual job. My son has that job. We go to the grocery store. He has to look at, he inspects them. That's his thing. He'll look to make sure there's no cracks in the eggs. You don't want to bring home a cracked egg. That's getting ripped off. You're mowing the grass for $25 when you bring home a, you're getting ripped off. So, first, you're in Canada. I was thinking you were going to say hockey. Is hockey like, you're the first person I really chatted with in Canada. Is that something you have to do or you have to like if you live in Canada? Or can you go to your friends, I don't really care about hockey? Because down here, football is a must.
Yeah, right. Well, I'll tell you right now, like, it'll go, you know, place by place around here. But, like, I've gone my whole life without having to care too much about hockey. You definitely have to understand the rules of hockey. You definitely have to be a fan of it, at least, you know, when the playoffs come around. You kind of have to. You have to be able to talk hockey. You have to be able to watch hockey at the bar. But you don't have to play hockey. But you better learn to skate. So I learned to skate really early. I can skate really well. But I never had any interest in playing hockey. It was just too expensive. We didn't have the kind of money. You know, it's all the equipment, the early mornings. Like, it's really an expensive sport to get into. So, but like, yeah, you have to kind of at least be able to fake your appreciation for hockey around here. Or else people get a little bit weird. But mostly you can get through your whole life without having to worry about it too much.
I'd basically just have to fake it till I make, because there's certain things I don't like, the icing rule. It's just hard for me. I've tried to like it, but I'm like, I'm 44 years old. It's so hard to make me want to learn hockey at my age. It is as hard.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. Another Canadian thing I want to ask you about, poutine. So what is poutine? Explain it to the listeners who don't know what poutine is.
Well, I mean, it's at the very base of it all, it's fries and gravy and cheese curds, and it's so good. I mean, and then like there's, you know, you go to some like you go to some poutine places around here that are like, have like 40 different options, because it can get elaborate, right? You can end up with like all kinds of different meats on there, and bacon, smoked meat, eggs, whatever. Like any, if they've gotten crazy, some of these places, you have more toppings than you do on pizzas these days. But just a basic poutine is like my favorite. Just keep it simple. As long as the cheese curd is good, as long as the gravy's good, and but like it's more of an East Coast Canada thing. So I'm from Vancouver, and they barely had it out there when I was growing up.
Really?
And then I moved to Toronto. Yeah. Like, oh yeah, there's like a couple places, but it wasn't a thing that people would eat that often. It wasn't literally until I moved to Toronto we started seeing it more. And then I lived for a year in Montreal as well. And as soon as you get into the French part, it's like, I mean, it's everywhere. It's like a real thing. But yeah, all the really big Canadian things that end up, that you end up hearing about in the States, most of those Canadianisms are from the East, right? So like growing up in Vancouver, for example, like snow wasn't even really a thing. We barely had any snow in Vancouver ever. I didn't have to buy a proper winter jacket until I moved to Toronto. It's like people are like, oh yeah, Canadians, all the snow in the winter, and I'm living in Vancouver, and it's like literally with snow maybe 2 days a year. So I was like, what?
So you're basically saying everything I know about Canada is basically from Toronto in the East Coast.
Yeah, 100%, yeah. Definitely. It's, it's, It's literally, and I didn't know it either. I thought you guys would make your movies and stuff, and I'd watch Canada depicted in American movies and TV shows, and I'd be like, oh, they're just dumb, right? Like, they don't get what Canada is. But I hadn't been to most of Canada, and then I went to the rest of it. I'm like, oh, never mind. I was just living in a small pocket called Vancouver that is just, like, so isolated from the rest of it. But well, I don't know. It's pretty weird.
Isn't Vancouver the Hollywood of Canada?
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
definitely.
It's the Hollywood of Canada. So there, it's probably really nice out there. I've been to Seattle, but never up to Vancouver before. I'd like to go to Vancouver, though. Looks really nice in the photos. Yeah.
There's so few places in the world like Vancouver. I mean, it's amazing. I go back there like almost every month with my family, and I'm happy that I can always go back there because it's just so nice.
Wow. Okay, so 20 years old. You finally decide, this is where I'm fascinated. So you decide that you want to be a magician, right? How does, like how do you announce this? Or does it just come, because like, do you get the family, because if my son came to me at 20 and said, I'm going to be a magician, I'd be like, ah, that's really cool, yeah, but how are you going to make money? That's what I would want to know.
So this is basically how it went. I had this really boring job. I was like working for the city, driving around, filling potholes in the road. And David Blaine was very popular. Like, it was like, you know, his first, maybe his first or second street magic special that ever come out. It was on TV everywhere. And I was like, man, I got to learn some card tricks like David Blaine. That'd be really cool. So I went to the store, bought a book on magic tricks at just a random store, and started learning these card tricks in my truck at work. And I just wanted him to like go to the bar and pick up girls and make my friends laugh. Like, that was like literally my goal. I was 19, 20. Like, that's all that sounded right. And then I just realized I got really good at it. I had so much time during the day to work on these things, and I was so interested by it that I started doing it at work and at the bar and with my friends. And then people would start asking me, like, hey, you know, my uncle's retiring. Can you come perform at the retirement party or someone's birthday or a wedding reception? I get in these little gigs, and people just offering me $100 here and there to come do these like card tricks at their you know, parties. And then I was like, oh, this is crazy. And at the same time, I was like interested in stand-up comedy, so I would go to like the open mic nights and stuff, and then I'd try stand-up, and that was fun. And then once I just like brought a trick, that wasn't that many people in the crowd, it was like 10 people in the crowd at these open mic nights, so I'm like, well, I could do a card trick there. So then I started doing that, and then it just really snowballed, man. There wasn't a lot of people doing magic. I mean, there still really isn't by comparison. So by the time I was 25, I was making like pretty good money on the side, you know, like 20, 30 grand a year on the side, just with these picking up these extra gigs. And my dad was like,
$20,000 or $30,000?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Oh, yeah. Is this under the table or is this reported?
It was under the table for a while. And then I'm like, this is getting too much, right? Like, I'm going to have to. And then I started getting like bigger and bigger gigs for like, in these companies would be like 400 people. And they're like, can you come do like a stage show for us for an hour at a Christmas party? And you could, you know, I'm like, I don't even know how to charge for this. I don't even know what to do on stage. I was doing all these gigs. I never even met another magician. I just like, from whatever I could learn from the books and there, whatever YouTube was around that, then whatever I could pull out of there was all the tricks I knew. So I just started, like, when I was 25, I was like, I got to give this a real try, you know? And I'd met a couple magicians at that point, and they were showing me more places I could buy magic, learn magic, you know? And I was like, oh, I think I just better swing the bat at this, because, again, no one in my family's ever been performers, you know? There's a lot of government workers and a lot of salesmen, stuff like that. And so my idea to be, like, in the performing arts, be a magician, any comedian, whatever, that just wasn't in the cards. So I didn't know how to do it, but I knew that it could be done. Because again, the money I was making on the side, I was like, man, if I go full time on this, even if I only make 50 grand a year or whatever, like, that's still fine. I mean, that's all I make at my other job anyways, right? Mm-hmm. So I was like, I have to try this. I'm 25. If it all falls apart, I can always go back to a real job at 40 and I'd still be okay probably. So I just took the chance. And the first 2 years after I quit my job, it was pretty bad, honestly. Like, my income did not go up from that 25, 30,000, and I was like, "Ooh, this is real tough." And then it, you know, I just kept sticking with it and kept you know, putting up content, you know, early YouTube content, 2013, 2014, when people were just starting to get really into it. and I had some videos go viral, and that got me on TV. And then after I got on TV a few times, that leveraged me into a whole new category. And the whole time, not stop learning, right? I was up every night at the comedy club trying new tricks and just in my at home just studying. I was obsessed, right? You have to get obsessed. If you're gonna be an entrepreneur in anything, even if it's not like in the arts or anything, I feel like you just have to be obsessed by it. If you're not going to be obsessed by it and enjoy being obsessed by it, then you better just go get a job, because it's a long, horrible road. I don't feel like I work at all, but my wife tells me I work 100 hours a week, and she's right. I do, but it's what I'd like to do. I wouldn't, you know, I'd just do it anyways.
there's a lot to unpack in what you just said. Yeah. I'm sitting here amazed at this story because, you know, you are a real life example. If I heard you right, and I think I did, you're a real life example of someone who pulled out YouTube and learned how to be and do magic tricks on YouTube,
yes.
Which is me 100%. When my wife's like, can you fix this on the car? And I'm like, well, let me watch YouTube. Like, I don't think I could ever change into a mechanic by watching YouTube, but you did it. You're an inspiration. I'm going to go home and I'm going to brag to my wife that I can watch YouTube and learn. Oh my gosh, this is amazing what you've done. So 100%. you would study YouTube. All your tricks come from there at first.
Yep.
And you were making money doing it. That is amazing to me. I just can't even, That's crazy. And you go from filling potholes, which I have to say probably is the most mind-numbing job for someone creative like you, to sit there and just have to fill a pothole up every day. That would be, oh gosh, I can't even imagine. But it was a good springboard, a motivator, right?
I was very lost at that point, right? Like, I dropped out of college and I was just working whatever job I had in the summer, that filling potholes job, I took it on full-time after I dropped out of school, thinking, I got to figure out what to do with my life. And I was working there for like 2 years and I just hated it. I gained like 50 pounds and I was just in a funk of like, this is my life now. Like, what am I going to do? And I literally had no ideas, but you know, learning magic was making me happy and doing these gigs on the side was making me happy. And I just thought like, man, I better at least try it. Right. Like, I honestly, I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to stay here and lie to anybody. I did not think it was going to work. Like, that is the honest truth. When I quit my job and I went out there and give this magic thing a try, I genuinely didn't think it was going to work. But I knew that I would definitely never forgive myself if I didn't at least try it.
So how often did you pick up chicks with your card playing? That's another fascinating thing. Like, would you go into a bar and be like, okay, check out this magic trick, babe. And then she'd be like, oh, you're pretty hot. Now I want to hang out with you.
Yeah, it would almost never work. It was the exact same success as if I just went and talked to girls. It was the exact same success rate.
And
the crashing and burning was really weird because you'd come across very creepy at some point too. I didn't need to, but like, they're just like, why does this guy have a deck of cards in the bar? Like, what the fuck's happening?
I wouldn't want you to pick me up, but I would come over and just want to see your card tricks. I'd be like, you're like, I don't want to go home with you, but I want, yeah, that's.
I didn't have to my dudes being like, you must meet so many women. And I'm like, I just meet a lot of you guys. And I have like 15 homies with me and we just end up getting drunk together and I'd be doing card tricks with the dudes after that. Like, it was super fun. Like, I was always very popular at the bar, but yeah, getting laid was definitely not. That's not a secret. Do not learn card tricks for that.
It's like, the dude that gets the really nice car and says, this is going to get the chicks, right? And,
exactly
and
right.
It never works because my wife could be like, I could care less what kind of car you drive as long as it wasn't a panel van with no windows. We are good.
100%. Yeah. Exactly. That's a great analogy. That's exactly what it is.
It is. But I do like that you attempted that. And you know, we've been to Myrtle Beach before.
Yeah.
And they have magic shops. And inevitably I end up in those magic shops every time. I just awesome. Like going in there. They have cool stuff like fart sprays, you know, tricks like that you can pull. My son, he's 10.
Yeah.
I bought him a deck of magic cards, and I'm like, here you go, son. This is the key to your success. And he proceeded to not care and lose them, and it made me mad. I'm like, look, you got all these cards in here. Does it give you a rush to fool or trick a grown adult? It would just make me so happy.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of my friends that got into magic when they were kids, they said that was the biggest hook for them, was like they were, you know, 10, 12 years old, and they were like, do a trick and genuinely fool their parents or their parents' adult friends. And that, like, that really resonated with them in a real way. For me, I was already an adult when I was learning these card tricks and stuff. So fooling people was super fun, but like it wasn't as impactful as like when you're 10 years old and you fool your parents like hard. That must be a whole extra level. For me, it was just like, I didn't really like fooling people too much. Like, I like fooling them, obviously, magicians, you got to trick them. But I liked when they would go grab their friend and come back, and they were like more excited to watch their friend be fooled, if this makes any sense.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Like it was, I actually got more joy in watching how happy it made other people, you know, like it was sort of this weird extra layer of just the sharing of the amazement to me was more exciting than people being like, whoa, you're so awesome. Like that was a little bit secondary. I did like being the center of attention, but the fact that like it would just go exponential. People would just keep grabbing other people being like, you have to see this. You have to see this. And the way it would pull everyone in together was just sort of like, that was the addicting part to me. Like I could amaze one person, sure. But next thing I know, there could be 20 of us and we're all enjoying the same thing together. And 10 minutes ago, we were all strangers, not talking, sitting in separate parts of the bar or different tables. And now we're all crowded around together, all having a laugh. Like that to me was so powerful and weird. And I loved being able to do that. That was the real magic to me. It was like, wow, I got 12 strangers talking to each other. We're all laughing at the same thing. This is amazing.
So you getting the adults to go get somebody is like when I'm chatting with someone like you and they go, that's a great question. Never heard that question before. That's the rush, right?
Exactly.
That's what you live for. You're like, I'm glad I finally asked something you've never heard.
Yeah.
I was hoping you would say, you know, I got a rush off tricking kids. See, that was, you know, when you're a kid, you're gonna trick adults. So now I'm strictly focused on 10-year-olds and I'm going to trick them.
That's one thing I've avoided throughout my whole career. And God knows how I've done it because I just don't do kids shows. I refuse to. And it's a common misconception for magicians is like, oh, like if someone finds out I'm a magician, they're like, oh man, my son would love you. Like, oh, I got to have you at my kid's party. And I'm like, oh, that's not what I do. I've literally never done it. I don't know how to entertain kids. They genuinely don't really like me. I have a few tricks for them that they're interested in, but mostly they just don't really like the kind of magic I do. And that's a really hard thing for people to understand. And it was a hard thing for me to sort of grasp as well, because I just didn't want to be a kid's entertainer. And magic for adults is more of a thing now, but 10 years ago, it really wasn't. People were like, what do you mean?
And let's be honest, the kid magicians Hollywood portrays, it's always sad. This is sad. This guy's like showing up half drunk and he's pulling a rabbit out of the hat. And the kids are like, yeah, that's really awesome. You know, it's not as cool as what you do where you're on a stage.
Yeah, it's much closer to being like I'm sure it came out of being a clown. And like, it's cool. It's awesome in its own way. It's a whole different job. To me, it's the difference between the genres of music, right? Like we understand all the different types of music, you know, and we understand that they're not the same, right? Like a classical musician or heavy metal is different, you know, than rap and country. Like, but when it comes to magic, it sort of gets lumped in one thing and people don't understand that there's a million different types of magic. Even right now, like as a magician, like I'm a magician, sure, but I'm definitely a comedy magician. So like when you see me do a show, I could do a better magic show, which is bizarre to people, but I choose not to because I'm interested in doing a funnier magic show. So like I literally will do a show and people have a great time and I'm doing it fully knowing that I could do more impressive magic if I wanted to, but I'm not. I consciously not, because that's not the type of magician I am. Mm-hmm. And it's very strange and the world's not ready to learn all those nuances yet. They're getting there. They're getting closer with it, but it's very fascinating to people because right now it just feels like a company will be like, oh, we had a magician once. We didn't like it. I'm like, cool. So like you had a band once and it didn't go well. So now you don't listen to music anymore. And it's very interesting to me the way we haven't quite parsed it out yet, but we're getting there.
But you can always say to that company, have you ever had a magician with a beer can in his underwear? That's what you can say.
And they'll say, They'll say, that sounds like an HR problem.
Yeah.
No, exactly. So my and I'm very aware that my show isn't for everybody, but the ones that it's for, I become their favorite magician they've ever seen, because they're seeing magic in a way that sometimes people think it's lame or corny or whatever. And I'm like, oh, good, come to my show. And then they come there and they go, oh, that's not how I remember seeing magic when I was younger. I'm like, I know, it's not just dub fireball. You know, and like it's there can be more to it. So I'm really happy when I get to, that's probably nowadays that makes me the most happy, is when I can turn someone from, I don't know if I like magic, to, oh wow, this was the most fun I've ever had at the show. That for me is huge.
Who are these weirdos that doesn't like magic? Everyone should love magic. I don't understand that. That is odd to me.
Well, I can tell you right now, I actually, because I meet them all the time.
Oh.
People don't like, some people, their personality is like, I don't like being fooled, right? Like they don't enjoy it. They want to know the secret, you know, they really do. And in a way that they're like, I hate this. I'm leaving here feeling stupid. I'm feeling like I've been lied to and I'm dumb, and they know it's a trick, but it's just like, why would I subject myself to, it's the same people that, like, some people don't like doing crosswords because they can't figure them out. Right, so they're not going to solve a crossword because they're like, I can't, I don't know. See, why would you subject yourself to something that you don't enjoy feeling dumb? So they don't like to do it. Other people enjoy suspending disbelief and being amazed. But I swear, half the people I run into are just like, this is not for me, you know. And especially if you see magic done poorly, it can really put you off.
Well, and that's what I was about to say. I don't ever go in feeling like I'm getting fooled. I go in wanting to be amazed, and I think that's the.
You're the right person for it, for sure.
Well, yeah. I mean, my family's like that. We want to watch. It's fun to watch someone trick us. I never feel like you're doing it to laugh at me. You're doing it to entertain me, and that's the.
But let me tell you, like right now, you know people in your life that seem to. Every time you talk to them, they immediately bring up some negative thing in the news, right?
Oh gosh,
and you're like, annoying. It's those people, right? And that's a lot of the population that want to focus on this. They want to sort of live in misery, whether they know it or not. And so you come at everything with joy and positivity, instead of like, hey, what movie did you see this year that you hated? You go, what movie did you see that you loved? Right? And some people just don't look at life that way, and they have a real, like, they start from the negative and those people, unfortunately, show up at my shows sometimes. Oh my. So you have to, like, start bad time.
And those people are probably lumped into the, okay, tell me how you did that category. And the thing is, I don't want to know, because it's the mystery's gone, right? Like, now I know what you did, and I want you to deceive me. You know, I want to feel like I saw something amazing that could not possibly happen in reality.
And I try to tell people, I'm like, man, I will tell you the secret. If you really want to know, I'll tell you right now. But I promise you, it's going to disappoint you so badly. And you're going to hate that you asked. And they go, no. And I'll do it sometimes. I'll tell them. And they're like, they just get so deflated. They go, what? That's it? Or whatever. And I'm like, yeah. And like, I swear they'll never ask another magician again. Because trust me, if you're amazed by a magic trick, just enjoy that feeling. As a magician, it's hard to get that feeling now because we know how it's all done. So I get so excited when a magician fools me, because these guys will come up to me at a magic convention, or just a magician will see me on the street and they get so pumped that they see me. They run up like, wow, oh my God, big fan. Can I show you a trick? And sometimes they show me something I've never seen and it fools me. And they want to show me how it works because they're a fan of mine. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yo, do not tell me. Please do not tell me. Let me sit with this. I'll email you in a week if I really want to know. I never get to be fooled. And when it happens, I'm like, oh, I latch onto it. So yeah, all the people out there listening, I'm like, yo, just enjoy being fooled. Live in that amazing, because you get to feel like, you know, like you walked into Hogwarts for a second, just live in that. Cause that's going to go away if someone tells you how it works. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. Speaking of that, first, Mount Rushmore of magicians, who are they to you?
Definitely. I mean, David Blaine, such a trailblazer. You know, he invented street magic. You know, Penn and Teller are, you know, they push it in a whole different realm, and they're absolute heroes of mine. David Copperfield, he still has the best magic show in Vegas if you go see it, right? And then, honestly, Chris Angel for me is huge, which most magicians make fun of him and discount him. He's not the most easy guy to like, as far as magicians are concerned. But Chris Angel's show Mind Freak, back when it was on, that was one of the ones that really propelled me into wanting to learn more. And he's a bit of a strange duck, and he goes about magic in a way that I don't like. He's trying to pretend like he has real powers, which I absolutely just, I think it's such a really weird way to try and perform. Like, it's like, hey man, we get it. It's a magic trick. Cost you $50 at the magic store. But he's like, no, I can really do this. Okay, too much. But anyways, he propelled magic into popularity more than almost anybody else around that time. So if you ask me, Mount Rushmore, for sure, David Blaine, Chris Angel, Penn and Teller, and Copperfield, those are the guys, you know? And years ago, you know, like Doug Henning was like a Canadian magician in the 70s, you know, and then he was like the first guy to really have a show in Vegas and bring magic to Las Vegas in a real way, you know, and then taken over after that by Siegfried and Roy and stuff. Those guys, like, they did a lot for illusions and stage magic, but over the, you know, if you zoom out, it's definitely, you know, I mean, I guess Harry Houdini sits on a mountain all on his own, right? He was the one who first popularized all of the stuff, and he's lasted the test of time longer than anybody. Yeah. But other than the ones I've named there, it's hard to even find other magicians that people recognize. Like, for me, an icon for me is like Amazing Jonathan, but most people I talk to don't know who he was, you know, and it's just, so it's really hard to find magicians. We all have so many magician names that only magicians recognize that are actual like heroes of ours, but the popular ones, it's hard to nail down. And out of the ones I've listed, with the exception of Amazing Jonathan, none of them are doing funny magic. They're doing very serious magic. And that, to me, is there's a huge hole in the market of magic, which comedy magic is going to fill. And that's why guys like me and Justin Willman, you know, we're really trying to get in there and fill that hole of that. And I don't know if you've ever seen Justin's show, Magic for Humans, but Justin's a great magician. He's like one of my like, you know, modern favorites, of course.
What about Carbonaro? Is that how it's it?
Carbonaro's great.
Yeah. I love his show.
You take that hidden camera magic, playing it off in real life is such a fun way to, like, for people to experience magic. Mm-hmm. Magic, when you don't know you're watching a magician, hits completely differently, right? Because your expectation is so, you're so on the back foot because it's so much different than, hey, this is a magic trick, as opposed to, look at this new thing. I what a genius idea. I love that guy. That's brilliant show.
His show is good. So you were on Penn and Teller Foolish. You won it, right?
I did, yeah, absolutely.
So that's pretty amazing. Explain to the listeners really fast what the gist of that show is if they haven't seen it.
So Penn and Teller are like, you know, icons in magic. They've had a show at the Rio Theater in Vegas for like 30 years. They have the longest running show in Vegas ever. And they have this show where they get all the magicians, all the best magicians, to bring their best trick, and you perform it in front of them, you know, live studio audience, and they sit there as the judges, but you're performing magic for legendary magicians. So after, they try and guess how the trick works. And if they don't guess it, you get a trophy. And if they do guess it, they kind of speak it in code, and you go, yep, 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 stop talking, don't give it away, and then you run off stage really quickly. It's absolutely a brilliant show. They're on season 10 now. I think this might be the final season because it's got to wrap up eventually. But 10 seasons, man, it's just so fun. And you get to see the best magic, huge variety. And not everybody fools them, that's for sure. But I was on season 2, and I fooled them, and I became one of the first people to ever fool them. And that really helped springboard my career into a whole other level.
How nervous were you to perform in front of them? Because they're legends. I actually went to the Rio with a buddy of mine back in like 2000. They hadn't been there long, I guess, at that point. It was about 2001, and my buddy got to get on stage. And I like what they do. They basically show you how they do tricks at their shows.
Yeah. But they're working on so many levels, which I love. Like, you know, they're like, I'm going to show you something. You're going to leave learning more about magic than you knew, but I'm going to make sure to also add this twist or this other layer where there's another thing happening, and you're still going to be so fooled and blown away. They're absolute geniuses that way. And when performing for them, because I performed for so many different, reality shows, competition shows, TV shows, and you're always being judged by celebrities, but never magicians. So, like, I'm on America's Got Talent. I don't really care what Heidi Klum thinks of me, you know? because she doesn't know what I do, right? Mm-hmm. So even if she loves it, it doesn't mean much, right? Love it or hate it, but now you're performing for my literal heroes in magic. So now I'm so nervous because they know everything. But my expectation is like, well, you're not going to fool them. They're the goats. But when you do fool them, or they do like something, it means so much more to you. It actually carries all that weight of like, you know, never meet your heroes unless they like you. Then of course meet your heroes, right? So yeah, it was the highlight of my career for sure, up to that point, at the very least. But yeah, it was nerve wracking, man. I was pretty messed up before the show. My brother was there to watch me, and we're just like, we were drinking by the pool all day because I was so nervous. And at one point he's like, hey man, you better stop drinking. And I'm like, yeah, I think you're probably right.
Yeah, I need
like,
to.
I'm going to go lie down for a couple hours here. So yeah, it was stressful.
Was that, so that meant more to you than even America's Got Talent, right? Because.
Way more.
Yeah. But it would have been cool. But yeah, you're Heidi Klum, who really cares what she thinks about magicians? Well,
and like AGT is like, give us 90 seconds. And you're like, oh man, doing a magic trick in 90 seconds, they have these weird timelines, so they're trying to just pump through stuff. Hearing someone sing for 90 seconds is fine. You don't want to hear a whole song anyways. That's great. Mm-hmm. Do the abridged version. But doing a magic trick in 90 seconds, I can barely get going. You need like 4, 5, 6, 7 minutes. My spot on Fool Us was like 8 minutes long. And no other show is willing to give you that amount of time. Like they're all like minute or 2 minutes max. Mm-hmm. And here they're like, yeah, do it. Do your whole thing. Let's see it. And that's where I really shine. I don't have a lot of quick visual magic. I do like get someone on stage, have some fun, mess around, like, and really get into it. And so for me, it was just a way better platform. Some other people, like, you know, Shin Lim or whatever, like he can succeed in America's Got Talent because he's like, yeah, I'll just show you this. I'm not even gonna speak. I'll just put on the music and I'll do quick visual, cool card magic and blow everyone's mind. Boom, give me a trophy. But that's just not where I excel. So it was actually just the perfect venue for me is Penn & Teller for sure.
Okay, so where did you meet your wife at?
We're actually from the same town. I met her in university through some mutual friends. And we didn't, you know, we were just friends for a while. We tried dating, didn't really work out. And then like 3 years after I met her, I was trying to break a Guinness World Record in my hometown, and she showed up to watch it. And then afterwards she's like, we should get a drink. And we went on like a proper date. And I think I was 25. I started dating her the same, like a month before I quit my job to be a magician full time. And we were just giving it a shot. And honestly, like we didn't think too hard about it. I approached my relationship the same way I approached magic. Like I was like, I don't know if it's going to work. I'm just going to try my best. And turns out, like, both those decisions have just worked out phenomenal. It's actually insane.
So you met her and you decided to throw all the cards away and not have to mm-hmm. go try to win ladies at the bar anymore. You know, you just got to...
Yeah, exactly.
She opened up your glove compartment. Instead of condoms, there's a bunch of cards in there. And she's like, what's this? Oh, put this away. Put that away. That's it.
Yeah. And then she's like, well, yeah, I mean, they're having the deck of cards instead of condoms is actually, you know, is better protection. You're not going to have any sex. So you're good.
She's such a, I love watching you two together. It's so much fun. Yeah. She's such a team player. Like my wife would definitely refuse to be my sidekick for anything I ventured into doing. If it was like this, she'd be like, no, I'm not getting on camera. Your wife and you have such a good chemistry, and watching you is fun for me. I enjoy it.
I appreciate that very much. And I'll tell her because she's happy to hear that. It's the best thing that happened during the pandemic is because we, you know, she's a flight attendant and I'm a magician. So, I mean, people talk about losing a lot during the pandemic, but like we literally, both of us went to zero. There's no working from home as a magician or a flight attendant. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, people are like, oh, I had to work from home or whatever. Some people lost a job. I mean, dude, we're both just out of work completely, you know? And the only option we had was whatever income I was making on YouTube, which wasn't a lot, really. Mm-hmm. But we had to go full time on it. And it was literally out of necessity. She never really shown much interest in being in the videos before then. But I was like, listen, we don't have a choice. We don't know how long this is going to be, this pandemic. This right now is the only thing that brings in any money. And it was really like, it's like a live or die situation, right? Mm-hmm. So she started doing it with me and it was instantly successful with her. And she's always like been very good in those things. She just didn't really have any, I don't know why, no interest towards it. But man, instantly people loved her. I thought it worked so well, worked out even better than I hoped. But what a great silver lining of the pandemic was finding out that my wife and I love making videos together. And now they've been seen by just like literally hundreds of millions of views with videos with her in them. It's just unbelievable to me. So it was a game changer. And yeah, I don't know if it would ever happen, you know? So like sometimes I'm like, damn, that's kind of crazy. Like, you know, I hate having a world pandemic, but I love now that I have this whole other thing with my wife, and it's just, we have so much fun doing it. Like, you know, sometimes it's work, but mostly we just have a really great time with it.
Yeah, y'all look like y'all genuinely enjoy doing the stuff you do. It's fun. It's fun to watch. You can always tell if people are doing things they don't really want to do, but they're there. And it's not, they're not being genuine. Definitely your wife, perfect person to have alongside what you do. Another thing I want to talk about is Big Trick Energy. I like the show. It's a great show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
I love the name. The name is really cool. I was telling my wife, I would compare this to Impractical Jokers magician style, right? Is that a fair comparison to anybody listening right now that hasn't seen it?
So yeah, absolutely. So basically that's why we went with True TV, because they're the ones that do Impractical Jokers.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were shopping this around, the original narrative was Jackass meets Magic. And then True TV, when we pitched them, they were like, you know, we have Impractical Jokers and we really understand how to do this. So we really want to make it more like that. And I never really considered it that way at the time. I was very much into, like, I really wanted to be more Jackassy, not maybe as gross or as painful, mm-hmm. but I really wanted to be more about I just want to be more shocking in a way, but they kind of reframed it as Joker style. And that is such a good way to look at it. And so we were like, yeah, let's do it. And it sure is super fun that way. It's like anything, when you make a TV show, you hear it from anyone who has made one. The directors and producers and the network, they all put their spin on it. So it doesn't ever end up where you want it to be. Mm-hmm. You know, it ends up morphing into what they wanted. I think Impractical Jokers meets Magic is the perfect way to view it. And if you like Impractical Jokers, then you would definitely like our show. And I'm extremely proud of it. And we got to film some amazing things, like just what a bucket list. Like, I've been trying for, you know, it took me 10 years to get a TV show, and it was everything I hoped it would be. I just love it. I couldn't believe they let us name it that, though, I tell you.
It's a catchy name. It's a real catchy name. And I'm like Eric. I have a minivan. So that's the, I can relate to minivan life. My wife was like, I don't want to get a minivan. Like, let's just get this minivan. It'll work. And now she loves the minivan. She didn't want to be that person. But
oh yeah, it's great.
So he
never replaced it. He used to have the BMW and everything, and he doesn't have it anymore, like, obviously, but like, he never even replaced it. He just has strictly minivan guy. He loves it.
I like that, though. It's plenty of room. He can store a lot of cards in there. There's a lot of Texas cards that can be stored in the minivan.
Absolutely.
What the show? How did it end for you with that? Is there any chance it's coming back? And how did that end if it's not?
Well, I mean, they kind of like it's one of those things where the numbers we were doing for them was really good for a cable show. Like, I think it was the second best show they had since they came out with Impractical Jokers. So Impractical Jokers for them is number one every year, but numbers wise, we were number two, and they hadn't seen a show do that well mm-hmm. since. So we're like, oh, we're going to get season two right away. Perfect. And then there's like, you know, these mergers and Time Warner buys out DreamWorks, and they get together, and executives get fired and moved around and shuffled, and then they ditch a bunch of shows. So we're like, oh, maybe we're going to get lost here in the shuffle. And that's sure enough what happened. But there's a sort of a behind the scenes thing where Chris Ramsey is kind of like, you know, he's the big draw to why we got the show, because he's, you know, 7 or 8 million followers on YouTube and same on Facebook. He has a huge fan base. So they were like kind of being like, okay, Chris is the main guy. you know, and he was really struggling with having a TV show because he's used to, you know, doing his YouTube stuff. He has 9 employees or whatever he has, right? So he was, his obligation is to his company, and being gone for 4 months in Vancouver to film this TV show was really hard on him, like mentally and financially and mm-hmm. everything. So, it was like, he was telling us before we got, you know, before they decided not to renew it, he was like, I don't think I can do it. Like, he was about ready to pull the pin anyway. So I don't think it was going to happen regardless. Mm-hmm. So it was very, it was unfortunate. We're all, you know, so excited we got to do one season of TV together, but I don't think it was going to work out, just because Chris was like, he's like literally like losing money doing a TV show, which is insane for most of us to imagine. But for a guy in his position, yeah, that's literally what was happening.
Wow. So, that's an amazing story. You never would have thought that.
No, you lose
money being on TV. You would think it would help.
Yeah. It helped everybody else. It just didn't help him, which, you know, but yeah, ultimately it didn't work out. And who knows? They never like canceled it. I think they still own the rights to it for another year probably. So who knows? I mean, they can always reboot it. Penn and Teller Foolish is a good example. They did season 1 in the UK. Mm-hmm. And then it didn't get picked up again. And then it waited 4 years. And then it got picked up by an American network. And they put it in Vegas. So, like, there was a between season 1 and season 2, there's a 4-year gap in Penn and Teller Fool Us.
Wow.
And now it's the most successful magic show ever to be on TV in the 10 seasons. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy. I would love to see another network pick this up if True TV's not going to use it. You could replace Chris. There's other magicians that would come on be like, we can make this work, you know, and it's still funny.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean.
And I think I'm going to repackage it and try and get it again, because I think there's just a few, and with a different network that might let us take a different approach to a couple of things, I think it would actually really work. So I'm going to keep it up because I like the idea. It's been my dream forever. Like, definitely the show is more close to what I like than any of the other guys. They all liked it, but like, it's more close to my sensibilities than anybody else's. Mm-hmm. So I'm definitely taking it on myself to try and get it going again, because I think there's so much more to explore there.
Yeah. I love it. So, but I'm a fan already. So you got me.
Appreciate it.
A couple more questions. One, tell me about what it was like. This is going to be for the ladies listening. What it was like on the set of the Hallmark movie, because Mismatched.
I just
got to ask that.
No, I love it. When I was living in Vancouver, I started trying to get into acting, and I would do like TV commercials and whatnot. And I got some stuff, which was fine, like just like small one line in a commercial type things. And then, you know, then it quickly comes around that I'm a magician. So then people would be like, oh, well, we need someone to be a hand double for this actor with like doing like a card trick or coin trick or, you know, and like they'd fill in for these guys and just do like, and he's supposed to be able to do a magic trick. So they'd use your hand. And then there, every now and then there'd be a role like in Mismatch. They're like, hey, we need this magician at this like wedding fair thing. And I'm like, oh, okay. So like my audition period process was so simple, right? And then next thing you know, you're like on set of a Hallmark movie and you're like, this is kind of nuts. So then it was amazing, like super fun. But the real fun part about it was finding out how many of your friends watch Hallmark movies but would never tell you that.
Oh my gosh.
but then they come up to you like, yo, I saw you in the movie. I'm like, oh really? Which one? And they're like, well, yeah. I'm like, well, you're watching a little Hallmark movie, right? And like, oh man, guys and girls alike, it was so funny to see how many people were watching Hallmark movies that the only reason they confess it to you is because they saw you on it. So it was eye-opening. It's great.
It's funny. My friend Sloan, she and her husband watch every Sunday night, they watch a Hallmark movie. Yeah, that's their hilarious. That's their thing, man. Oh, they sit together and watch that Hallmark movie. So it's definitely a thing. My wife, Christmas is she has already been cranking out the Christmas movies at our house. It's not even Thanksgiving yet, and she's like, I just want to watch a Christmas movie, Brad, and I'm like, okay, well,
man, that's hilarious.
Now I want to watch Mismatch just so I can see you and go, I've actually talked to him. I've talked to that guy. He's cool. He's a cool guy.
It is weird because like they're like, do a trick like this. And you're like, this trick makes no sense. But all right, whatever you guys want. Like, you're the boss. So,
yeah, do a trick like theirs. What is a trick that you can't, like, you've tried? Is there a trick you've tried and you just can't match? You're like, I can't do this. There's no way I can bring this out. I just can't do it.
There's one that's in my new special coming out in December. I'll put it on YouTube for everybody. Mm-hmm. And there's a trick in there that took me 6 years, and I gave up on it many times over the 6 years. But basically, I rip my shirt off, and then I take duct tape and I tape the shirt back together. Okay. And then I pull the duct tape away, and the shirt's completely fine.
Wow, I'm amazing. I'm imagining this in my head right now while you're talking about it.
Yeah, so it's a torn and restored T-shirt. Now people have been doing. Magicians have been doing torn and restored playing cards, torn and restored newspapers, torn and restored ropes, you know, torn and restored money. And I just wanted to do it. Like, I like the idea of ripping your shirt off. You know, to me, I'm like, that's a cool image. And I'm like, and I love duct tape. So I'm like, I got to figure this out. But yeah, 6 years of like actually working on it every week and then throwing it away and giving up and then prototypes and other ideas and practicing the sleight of hand for days and then realizing it didn't work. And then eventually figuring it out. So that was like one of the ones where I'm like, whoa, like, how is this actually going to work? And it does. So if you'd asked me this 8 months ago, I would have been like, this shirt trick, I can't figure it out. But now I can confidently be like, yeah, it's one of my favorite things that I've ever come up with. And man, how, like, so satisfying when you finally get something after that long.
I bet so. And that's where wives come into play, because for me, when I get down, I'm like, man, this just sucks. I'm struggling with this. I don't know what... She's always there to pick me up and go, this is why, and this is what you're doing good. And I bet that's what your wife does when you're frustrated.
Oh, for sure. And she's also very quick to be like, she's like, this isn't your last good idea. She's like, who cares about that then? She's like, think of something funnier. Think of something better. Like, cause she feels very supportive in the fact that she thinks that I'm endlessly creative, you know? And I feel that way too, but it's so nice having someone else remind you of that. So she's like, it's okay. You'll think of something else. You'll come up with something else. And that kind of confidence in me, it makes it so much easier to be like, yeah, you're right. Who cares about that? And then you can move on. And where I might get hung up on it even longer unnecessarily when she's like, no, just you got so many ideas to do something else. And you're like, oh, wow, good call.
Yeah, it's Jimmy DeResta said this on the show a while back. He's like, you got to have more than one idea, and that's what you're saying. Like, if you just got one idea, man, you're putting all your eggs in that one idea basket. It's not going to be great.
Well, people often tell me, like, because, you know, I put my stuff online, and then other magicians will steal it, because there's not really, there's not the same way as, like, music or comedy. There's no real, like, protection against other people doing your magic tricks.
There's no code? There's no code?
There is, but it's just not really. Like, it's so much looser than any other industry. Yeah. Like, so many, because we all have to learn the same classic tricks. So you're like, who really owns this? Mm-hmm. And that sort of morphs into, well, I watch another magician, like, oh, I know how to do that. So then you sort of start doing it. And next thing you know, you're all doing the same trick. So it's really hard. You really have to force yourself to be original, or else you're out there just doing Lincoln rings and cutting ropes in half. And then once you do become original and you put out something online or whatever, and millions of people see it, I mean, someone across the world watches it and goes, oh, that's cool. I think I know how that works. And then they just start doing it, because there is no real code, because we all do all the basic tricks the same anyway. So it gets really blurry really quickly. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that keeps a lot of magicians from putting their really good original stuff online or posting it anywhere, because they're afraid it'll get stolen.
Wow.
And that's where I'm like, I don't care, because like you just said, I'm like, that's not my last good idea. I'd prefer you didn't steal it, but I would rather millions of people watch it. And if you go steal it and pretend it's yours, good for you, man. I'm just going to come up with another idea. I don't care. Like, you know, it's upsetting, but especially if, you know, someone sees it and they start having some success with it, and you're like, damn it, that's mine. But, you know, again, you just got to have confidence and be like, I'm the original. You can't copy that. And I'll just carry on. Like, you know, I'd keep carrying on doing the best Wes Barker impression I can ever do. And that's all you can do.
Yeah. They can steal your tricks, but they don't have your sense of humor. And I think that's
what I say.
Yeah. That's the selling point. And imitation is the highest form of flattery, right? They're trying to imitate you. They're knockoffs. And I feel like I'm just defending you in the schoolyard.
Yeah, you're gonna, I appreciate it.
You're going to steal his stuff. Don't steal it. I want to watch it. I thought there was a code. I feel like there's always people going, there's a code. You don't do this. There's a magician code. And
I wish.
I know we're about to wrap up. What's the craziest corporate event you've ever done?
Craziest corporate event?
Yeah, event. Not a corporate, just somebody's hired you and you're like, wow, these people are bonkers. You don't have to name names, but what was it like?
I mean, I've done I had a corporate event in Singapore one time and they hired me and I knew right away that they weren't going to like it. Because, I mean, they speak English there great, but they don't speak it in a way they wanted something more visual and less comedy heavy, right? For sure. Mm-hmm. Unless English is everybody's first most fluent language, then, you know, good luck. So I did this corporate event and they were really expecting a guy with an assistant and get in the box, cut him in half, glittery shirt and chest hair or whatever. And I just wasn't doing that. So it was just this really just polite golf claps between tricks. Oh, it was just absolutely murderous. And they, flew me across the world and, put me in it's just a big fancy event. And I was like, God, and I knew going there, I'm on the plane knowing I'm going to go bomb. Right. But mm-hmm. You're like, it's a good money, good deal, good everything, good experience. So flying across the world and spending, 53 hours in Singapore knowing that you're going to eat it on stage is the weirdest feeling. And then afterwards, everyone's politely being oh, that was very nice, good job. And you just know it wasn't. And I don't know what compelled them to book me out of all the people in all the world, but they clearly saw me online and were like, let's get this. Mm-hmm. But whoever made that decision probably was not allowed to book any more magicians or entertainment after that, because it was a weird, weird choice. And then I've done some Northern Canadian mining companies and stuff where you go there and most of the everyone's just hammered drunk, and then you spend most of the time doing tricks and no one cares, and you can't get their attention, and then it's just this drunken party where you're like, oh, they didn't need me. They were going to have this much fun regardless. Mm-hmm. And those ones are always funny too. Cause you're subtle, you're trying to get them to have less fun and quiet down and watch you. And in reality, it would have been better just to be like, turn up the music and let's just drink and party. Cause that's all they want to do. So, I've bombed on opposite ends, this fancy Singapore high end corporate or these drunken mining parties in the middle of nowhere, Northern Canada. I've seen it all and they never feel good, man. I like the ones where people are just the right amount of crazy, but they actually will let you do your act. Mm-hmm. That's what you really want, man. That's the real one.
Have you ever been on a flight where your wife's working it?
Mm-hmm.
You have?
I've had a couple. I was in Vegas one time. And we're partying and doing our thing. I can't remember why I was there, some show or something. And she called me the night before. She's like, oh, hi, what's up? And we're talking. She's like, what are you going to do tonight? She's like, last night. I'm like, I don't know. We're going to shut it down kind of early. I got that early flight tomorrow. She's like, oh, okay, cool. And I didn't. I partied till 4 in the morning and went basically straight to the airport. And I absolutely looked just the worst you could possibly look, right? Mm-hmm. Super hungry, still drunk, really. And just sweaty and gross. And I'm lying in the seat and she comes over to me and she's like, you went to bed early, right? And I opened my eyes and my wife, and I was like, oh my God. And I didn't know she was going to work that flight. And she just totally sprung it on me. And it was pretty, she's like, don't tell anyone that you're married to me looking like that. I was pretty embarrassed. I was like, definitely got caught in a little bit of a lie, but, she's good like that.
That's hilarious. I like that you said they want someone with a box. I'm imagining you going, honey, get in the box. And she's like, no box, not the box.
Yeah.
I'm not doing the box. Yeah. No box.
Yeah, she's not into helping me. She's down for the videos, but she doesn't want to do that part of it, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, what you got a special coming out. Tell us a little bit about that before we wrap.
So I don't know. I was going to just put it on my YouTube channel. I don't know when it's going to come out. It'll be before the end of the year. My goal is to get it out at the end of November, but it's got to go through a couple more rounds of editing with other people and some audio guy. I don't know the whole deal, but it'll come out on my YouTube channel within the next 4 weeks here and before Christmas for sure. And it's going to be free. It's going to be an hour long, all new stuff that you probably haven't seen me do anywhere. And some really, I'm really proud of it. It's like got some really, awesome ideas. And I'm just so happy that I finally got to put it out, because my last special was 2019. So I've been sitting on this material for a long time, a lot of it. And it was just long overdue. And, I'm really looking forward to what the response is going to be, because, it's really good. And I have no problem saying that. And I'm really proud of it. So, keep an eye out for my YouTube. It's called Stunt Magician, and that's what I'm Stunt Magician on Instagram and everything. And if people want to check it out, follow me, and you'll see it, because it's going to be a good time, and definitely worth cracking a beer and sitting down and watching it, I think.
I'm excited. I'm going to have a watch party. I'm excited. I'm gonna get my buddies, and we're going to watch this thing, because I'm excited. And
I love it.
I'll spend the whole time going, I'll talk to him. That's what I'll do. That's my move. That's my move. I'm just going to do that. Like, he's now a friend of the show. I've talked to him. He's good. Hey, thank you, Wes. I appreciate the time you share with us. And I love your career. I'm going to keep following it. And I'm appreciative. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Brad. Thanks, man. Talk to you soon.
Stay tuned. Bye now. Well, I hope you enjoyed that chat with Wes Barker. I've got to go out and buy some magic cards, a deck of magic cards to trick my family. I've got some people in my house that need to be tricked, but they will probably be like the Who and say, I won't get fooled again. Some of you old timers got that joke. I'm going to go do that now. But before I leave, I must remind you, please like and subscribe. Leave us a good review on all platforms, iTunes, Spotify. Follow us on Instagram at workadviceforme. Email the show, workadviceforme@gmail.com. I say Gmail, it's Gmail. And this podcast, Work Advice For Me, is brought to you by Hopecast. Thank you, Hopecast. My name is Brad. I'm your host, and I will see you next time on Work Advice For Me.
I hate to interrupt what you're doing now, but something very important I need to let you know about. When you purchase Generous Coffee Beans, we want you to try to enjoy each brew for two reasons. Number one, because you're a part of something bigger, making a positive impact around the world. And number two, because we did not compromise on the quality of coffee. You're drinking some of the best coffee in the world. 100% of profits are donated to nonprofits that are fighting injustice facing humans around the world. Wow, that's powerful. Generous is best known for its specialty coffee, but the heartbeat of Generous is their hope to use for profit business for good. In 2024, Generous is hoping to provide coffee to churches around the U.S. to spread a message within congregations that churches care about people, even down to the coffee they are serving and the people they enjoy. I apologize for that extremely long run-on sentence. If you have interest in hearing more about Generous Coffee, please reach out to their founder, Ben Higgins, at benhiggins@generousmovement.com. Thank you, and back to our scheduled podcast.